Now, the first couple of Texas Radio. Here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
Good morning, Allison, and everybody listening.
Good morning, Bill.
We appreciate your listenership this morning. Got a lot going on. Mm-hmm. A lot going on today. We have a big, really big shoe for you today, and we have a couple of local, not shouldn't say local, regional musicians coming in, quite well-known guys. They play a lot around Austin and
Kerrville.
Kerrville and parts unknown and the rest of Hill Country. So we're looking forward to that a little bit later today, and a lot of things going on. But we are sometimes wrong.
But we're always right.
We're always right. Fighting a never-ending battle for truth, justice.
And the American way.
I didn't know if you were going to say that. We are never PC. We are proudly...
BC.
Well, PI.
Oh, PI.
Politically incorrect, but you're right, Allison. Most importantly, we strive to be BC, biblically correct. I am a native Texan from the Panhandle, and Allison is...
I'm a Native American.
You're a Native American. You are, in several ways. Mm-hmm. I was born in Texas, you were born in America, but you're also part Chickasaw.
Mm-hmm. I am Chickasaw Indian.
All right. And just a trigger warning, Allison and I identify as, you're not going to fill in the blank, non-binary. You don't remember that? We only say that every show.
I forgot.
Oh, and we like to begin our program with a verse from Proverbs 16. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that rules his spirit than he that takes a city. And also from James chapter 1, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Philip Henry wrote, it is the great duty of all Christians to put off anger. It unfits for your duty. A man cannot wrestle with God and wrangle with his neighbor at the same time. Short sins often cost us long and sad sorrows. How about that? The Old Farmer's Almanac, which has been published since 1792, as you probably know, makes very long-range weather predictions for regions of the country. And they have an 80% accuracy rate over many, many, many years that they've been doing it. And they say that in our region, our region is large, so they say north or south sometimes, because our region goes from most of Oklahoma down to most of Texas. And they say for October, they are predicting temperature average will be 1 degree above average. Precipitation, unfortunately, be 2 inches below average, and that's a shame. I was looking at the rainfall around Hill Country, and our normal rainfall up to this date is a little over 20 inches, and we've had just a little over 10 inches as of a couple of days ago, and I'm not aware it's rained anywhere in Hill Country since then. So we are half what we ought to be, and it's pretty obvious if you're, you know, looking around at the landscape. But that's what they're predicting for the month of October, the Old Farmer's Almanac. So you can believe that or don't believe it, but you've got an 80% chance of being right if you do believe it. So. I saw it, by the way, Allison, I see that John F. Kennedy Jr. is going to make a big announcement this next week. Mm-hmm. He's running as an independent for president. Not as in the Democrat primary.
That's pretty amazing.
Oh, that's got to keep, well, I was going to keep Joe up at night.
Awake?
I don't think it keeps him awake.
I don't think anything will keep him awake.
That's right. But the Democrats have got to be quaking in their boots because he's going to siphon off a lot of Democrat votes.
Sure will.
From
sure will.
Whoever's the nominee. So that's going to be a big deal. Going to be a very big deal.
It could even get some unhappy Republicans, depending who the nominee is.
Oh, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right. And it, you know, it looks like Trump will be the nominee, but there are people who don't, a lot of Republicans who don't like Trump, and never Trumpers and the rhinos and all. And they might go ahead and either stay home or vote for Biden or whoever the nominee is, Kamala, the great philosopher Kamala Harris.
do you have any of her quotes?
They might... No. Okay. Have I memorized any of her quotes?
Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
I haven't. I haven't memorized any of her quotes. I have better things to do. I have pencils to sharpen. I'm getting a head start on coloring my Easter eggs for next year. So no, I don't have time to memorize her quotes. But that's what we've got there. But we have a lot in the show today that we need to get to. So let's get to it. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking about events in Hill Country coming up that you and your family should know about. There's a lot of exciting things to do, a lot of good causes to be part of, and we'll have that coming up a bit later. In the Bill and Allison program on the Hill Country Patriot, we are your information station.
And we are the first couple of TexasRadio.com, where you can go hear our show anytime, 24/7.
That's right. Download it to your favorite digital device, mm-hmm. and listen to any of our previous shows. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, also in the news, I see that I've got a little story here somewhere that, here it is. Our disappointing senator, and is he not a disappointment? I'm talking about John Cornyn, a rhino, Republican in name only. He voted this week for another $6 billion to go to Ukraine.
Isn't that disgusting?
Yeah. Yeah. And Donald Trump Jr. Has called him out, along with other Republicans, Mitch McConnell, speaking of people who don't know where they are, Senate Minority Whip John Thune, a Republican from South Dakota, Shelley Moore Capito, Republican from West Virginia, Senator Katie Britt, Republican from Alabama. They all voted for $6 billion more to Ukraine.
And it's not because it's a democratic country.
No, it's not part of NATO.
Right.
So what's the argument for doing this kind of thing? Allison, I did a little research here, and while we all of us, are battling inflation, trying to make ends meet, our tax money is subsidizing small businesses in Ukraine.
Mm, do you have that story?
I'm looking at that story.
Oh, good, good. I was going to bring that, but I don't think I did. So why don't you go ahead and do that?
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. for letting you do it.
Our tax money has been going to prop up Ukrainian small businesses. One example is a designer knitwear company located in the capital of Ukraine, which is far from the front lines. They do appreciate it. We have pumped nearly $25 billion, with a B, dollars of non-military aid into Ukraine's economy so far. And
how many billion?
That's $25 billion of non-military aid to prop up designer clothing businesses, mm-hmm. and things like that. Now, the figure, according to the defense minister of Ukraine, the war costs $100 million a day. And guess how much we send, if you factor it out, per day to Ukraine? $123 million a day.
Wow.
And what happens to that $23 million?
I was going to say, where does the rest go?
Yeah. I don't know if it goes to designer knitwear companies. Or,
yeah.
You know, I figured that out. That's $690 million a month, or at the same pace, $8.3 trillion a year, trillion with a T, going to Ukraine from United States taxpayers.
Yeah, so every time you, if you're working on your taxes, every time you pay your federal income tax, think about it. Think about where your money's going.
No kidding.
Who it's supporting.
Who it's supporting. Who it's absolutely right. We're looking at this government shutdown, which apparently is going to happen tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
They just had a vote on it, and the vote didn't go.
And the upside to that is I heard that the IRS is going to be laying off, temporarily at least, about, I think it was about two-thirds of the IRS agents.
Wow. Wow. Did you know, by the way, I don't have the figure in front of me, but... there are about a third as many or less border agents as there are IRS agents. So that tells you the priorities of the Biden administration, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Also, this I just found this, the U.S. aid is also funding seeds and fertilizers for Ukrainian farmers and covering the salaries of all 57,000 Ukrainian first responders. That's where our tax money's going.
Wow. Okay?
Yeah. The yeah.
Do American farmers get tax dollars to buy their seed and fertilizer?
No. They get if they're enrolled in the program, they get some aid, but frankly, it's minimal for most farmers, unless you're a big corporate farmer. But it's minimal for most individual farmers. And most farmers that I know, and I know a lot of farmers, as you know, Allison, you mm-hmm. and I both know a lot of farmers.
We both do.
They're totally.
We're going to be seeing several next week.
That's right. And they're totally against government programs mm-hmm. for agriculture. They say, let agriculture be a free market, which it ought to be. But we live in a socialist country, so what are you going to say? But staying on this this topic of the U.S. The government shutdown, Pentagon will keep funding Ukraine through a government shutdown.
No kidding.
Yeah. It's an essential operation. However, active duty troops might work without pay. How do you like that?
Wow.
Yeah, how do you like that? So this you know, Republicans, a lot of Republicans started out, conservatives, libertarians even started out saying, well, we need to help out Ukraine, you know, they're being attacked and all this. You know, they're even talking about sending advisors, American military advisors to Ukraine.
Oh, I'm surprised they aren't already there.
They're not. Well, we know that there are some troops. They're keeping it a secret. But we ran that story months ago that there are American troops in Ukraine, quote, advisors. Now, some in our audience, I won't be any more specific than that, or some in this studio, may remember that's how the Vietnam War started,
mm-hmm.
sending American advisors. Before we mm-hmm. sent troops,
mm-hmm.
we sent American advisors, military advisors, and some people are calling for that right now. Well,
you know, Zelensky said to Americans, you will send your...
That's exactly.
Yeah, you will send your young people here. So you want me to play his quote?
Well, what this is, yeah, it needs, and we do have the audio of it. It's he was speaking in Ukrainian, and so that what you'll hear is the translator translating what the president of Ukraine recently said in a speech.
The U.S. will have to send their sons and daughters exactly the same way as we are sending their sons and daughters to war, and they will have to fight, and they will be dying, and they will be dying, and they will be dying.
Yeah,
that's how about that?
The president of Ukraine boldly
says our children will go to Ukraine and die.
And after he said that, John Cornyn and these other Republican senators voted to send $6 billion more to them.
Mm-hmm.
These people want war. They want mm-hmm. they want our yeah. our yeah. troops to die.
Yeah,
is this what they want? Is this what Cornyn wants?
Apparently.
What
if we just had no wars at all? How about that?
Sounds like John Lennon.
What a concept.
Yeah, war.
Imagine
what Queen Elizabeth I, not the one who just recently died, but Queen Elizabeth I did everything she could to keep her country out of war, Britain out of war. The only time she prepared to go to war was when the Spanish Armada tried to invade England. And then she was ready to go to war to defend her country. And that's because she knew that nobody wins in a war except the arms merchants. People get rich by supplying, like the Rothschilds supplied both sides in many wars and got richer and richer and richer. So nobody benefits from war. It's a myth that wars can benefit anybody, but as I said, but the arms merchants. War is a horrible, horrible thing. And for some reason, and Allison, you can enlighten us on this, the United States, if there's, you know, if the Hottentots are fighting the Hottentoots, we've got to, you know, go over there and fight on one side or the other. And why is that? You have no answer?
It's taped on my keyboard.
It is. The only person I know who has the Truman Doctrine,
taped
on her keyboard.
It was just totally blanking. Yeah, the Truman Doctrine states that the United States will get involved whenever any of our friends are threatened from within or from without.
That's not only just NATO. NATO requires us to get involved in any NATO country that's at war. We have to go and fight for them. But this is not just NATO. This is any so-called democratic country.
Yeah, right? Any democratic country. But as I pointed out, Ukraine is not a democratic country.
It certainly is not, is it?
Mm-mm.
Certainly is not. Well, on to... I think I have some good news here. It's hard to believe that there's some good news, but there is. Did you see that the mayor of Dallas, the Democrat mayor of Dallas, named Eric Johnson, announced this week that he's becoming a Republican?
No, I hadn't heard that.
He's, yes, he is black. He announced that he is joining the Republican Party, citing the failure of liberal policies in combating crime, homelessness, and drugs. He said, I realize this will come as a surprise to many. Yeah. He said, quote, "The future of America's great urban centers depends on the willingness of the nation's mayors to champion law and order and practice fiscal conservatism. Our cities desperately need the genuine commitment to these principles, as opposed to," and this is, again, Mayor Johnson of Dallas, "as opposed to the inconsistent poll-driven commitment of many Democrats that has long been a defining characteristic of the Republican Party." He said, in other words, American cities need Republicans and Republicans need American cities. And in February, the Democrat mayor, now Republican of Dallas, shared an article arguing that the mass retirement within the Austin, Texas police force was driven by the Defund the Police movement. And, you know, you hear about these cities all over the place now that are run by Democrats, these big cities, racked by violence. Dallas managed a nearly 10% reduction in violent crime in 2021.
Excellent.
Under the leadership of Mayor Johnson.
Excellent.
Two of the 10 largest cities in America now have Republican mayors, and they're both in Texas. And you don't hear about this violence and flash mobs breaking into Tiffany's and,
you
know, and all that
stuff. Chicago. Yeah, you have a couple of interesting stories. It's not really related to Hill Country, but about Chicago.
Well, I did read that story.
You were telling me that restaurant that just closed?
Yeah.
Famous restaurant?
Yeah, it used to be called the 95th. It's now called the Signature Room in Chicago at the top of the Hancock Building.
Which is the tallest building in Chicago, isn't it?
No, actually, what was formerly the Sears Tower,
never mind.
And it has a different name now, but that was a little taller. But Hancock is a beautiful building. I've always loved the Hancock building. And I used to live in Chicago. I went to school in Chicago, and so I got to know the area pretty well. Anyway, this very fancy restaurant on the 95th floor of the John Hancock building in Chicago has been there for decades. Since the Hancock building was built back in the 1970s. And it's, you know, it's a very foo-foo restaurant, has good reputation. You were there. I could never afford, as a as a poor college kid, I couldn't afford to go there.
I had a date.
Okay, well, he paid for it, okay. And the Signature Room now just announced this week, posted signs, "We are closing permanently." Closing permanently. And there's not going to be another restaurant there unless they can get somebody else to lease it. But they said because of things out of our control, including the crime waves in Chicago. You realize where, if you don't know, this is the heart of what they call the Magnificent Mile or the Gold Coast of Chicago. You don't get any fancier place in Chicago than where the Hancock Building is and that North Michigan Avenue area.
That's where all the high-end shops are, every designer shop you can imagine. And there's a Tesla dealer there.
There's Tesla, there's Rolls dealers, Bentleys. So, you know, you don't get any more high-end than this area. And they said because of the flash mobs, and people don't know what a flash mob is, it's you know, somebody gets on social media and says, let's hit Tiffany's at, you know, in 2 hours, and they get thousands of people who come down there and break into Tiffany's or wherever. And the people who run this foo-foo restaurant said, we can't take it anymore. The crime has become awful, and people who might come down to shop and say, hey, let's grab dinner at the Signature Room, they're not coming down to shop anymore. So that's cut into their business, and they're out of it. They're closed. Same with Lowry's. Right, Allison?
Yeah, that Lowry's is one of our favorite restaurants.
Yeah.
Their very first restaurant was in Beverly Hills. It opened in the 30s during the Depression, I guess, which is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then they opened many years later, I guess in the 70s, they opened one in Chicago.
That's right.
And they opened one in Las Vegas, and they also have one in Dallas.
In Dallas.
But during the riots a couple years ago, when they were so bad,
in Chicago, I was
watching them on TV, and I said to Bill, I said, that's the neighborhood we walk through to get to Lowry's. Well, Lowry's closed. Yep. They are no longer in Chicago.
And then that was also in the Magnificent Mile Gold Coast area.
I was talking about Lowry's. if you haven't been to the restaurant, you have definitely seen their salt and their seasonings.
Yeah, you can
and the
buy
grocery,
in any
store.
Grocery store.
Lowry's seasoned salt.
L A W R Y S. Mm-hmm. Lowry's.
Lowry's seasoned salt. Lowry's seasoned pepper.
So they closed up in Chicago several years ago, sadly, and they were also in the same area. They were like 2-3 blocks from the Hancock Building and from mm-hmm. Tiffany's and all mm-hmm. that. But they said, we can't take the violence anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's part of the Cloward Piven strategy. And if look that up if you're not familiar with it. Cloward, Cloward-Pivens, Pivens. And this goes back to, they're communists. They were professors. And they came up with this strategy that is now being implemented. Which is part of the strategy. It goes along with rules for radicals and these other communists' ideas that cause tremendous disruption in cities. Just defund the police, allow criminals to run wild. Then all the decent people will move out of the city, and Democrats can control the city. Of course, they control most of them anyway. But they have an iron grip on the city from then on. And they can do whatever crazy communist thing they want to do. It's all about power, and it's all about money. So that's Cloward Piven's strategy. If you are Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, if you haven't read that, you should, to really understand what's going on. Which reminds me, I've got to understand what's going on. You look like you're ready to take a break, Allison. Is that what it is? Got to give me the signal.
I was thinking about it.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you were so intent, so engrossed in your reading, you wouldn't have seen my signal.
I probably wouldn't have seen your signal. when we come back, we're going to stay on the subject I just touched on. Why is what's going on in the world going on? Things like confusion over sexual identity and wokeism. What's behind all this? We're going to explore that when the Bill and Allison Show return on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. Be back in a flash.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison. I'm Allison, and that's Bill over there.
That's Bill over here. I'm still Bill. Even after the commercial break, I'm still Bill.
Unless you have something, I've got an interesting thing about Austin. Austinites are used to navigating crowded streets, but it isn't every day that there is a traffic jam with no drivers.
What?
Did you hear about this?
No.
Last weekend, a fleet of self-driving robo-taxis caused major congestion after getting stuck in a West Campus area. The vehicles were seen late Saturday evening blocking traffic along San Gabriel Street, with some facing oncoming traffic.
What?
There were roughly 20 Chevy Bolts operated by Cruise, the self-driving subsidiary of General Motors. The cause of the incident remains unknown, but a Cruise spokesperson told the Drive, that publication that announces, that the problem could have been related to heavy foot and vehicle traffic. Well, duh, this is Austin.
Yeah.
What they expect?
It's related to traffic.
Our cars are designed first and foremost to prioritize safety, and that includes using caution around pedestrian, the spokesperson
said. Oh, that's a good plan. I'm glad to hear that.
They have a maximum speed limit of 25 miles per hour.
Well, who would want to take it?
I know.
I don't want a taxi that can't go more than 25 miles an hour.
Well, really.
Plus, I would never get into one of those things.
Oh, I don't scare the heck out of me.
You know, that reminds me, what's the movie where, okay, I can't remember now.
Okay.
I think it's a Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Might be, or I shouldn't talk about things I don't know anything about.
No, you shouldn't. Well, anyway, this isn't the first time.
I can see it
that these vehicles. Okay, maybe you'll think of it later. This isn't the first time vehicles have brought city traffic to a standstill. Last month, 10 autonomous cars froze at a busy intersection in a San Francisco neighborhood, just days after California regulators approved robo-taxis to operate their driverless cars in the city 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The company said the stoppage was due to wireless connectivity issues.
Yeah, right. Brother.
But that hasn't stopped the complaints from rolling in. Earlier this month in Austin, Transportation and Public Works Department published a memo highlighting safety concerns about automated vehicles driving in the city's neighborhoods.
You think?
Yeah. According to the agency, approximately 125 fully electric driverless vehicles are operating in Austin.
Wow.
Simply put, cities in Austin cannot regulate autonomous vehicles. They are testing it in Dallas and Houston by the end of the year.
Good plan.
Isn't that delightful?
That's a good plan. Wow. Well, before the break, I mentioned that, you know, a lot of people wonder, what is going on with all this gender confusion and, it seems like families are breaking down. Is there any explanation at all? You know, all this wokeness of companies doing things that are totally against their customer base, the Bud Light stuff and everything. It seems like life gets crazier every year. So what's going on? I mean, you know, there are woke organizations out there, they're battling, basically fighting for evil, taking a lot of anti-family positions, warring on the traditional family, which is the glue that holds society together, is the family. So we've got divorce rates higher than they've ever been, even among Christians, by the way. More and more people give up on their marriages. And it's satanic. I'm not saying that everybody's demon possessed, but they're certainly demon influenced. Satan would love to tear apart the foundational structure of our family, of our society, which is the family. So as the family goes, society goes. So if he can split children off from a family structure, they become a lot more vulnerable to temptations. Now, that's the number one tactic in Satan's strategy to destroy the foundations of our nation. For example, abortion. If you can't break up a family, then eliminate it before it ever begins. Americans have aborted, I don't know if you know this number, Allison, since the Roe versus Wade decision in 1973, Americans have aborted 63 million babies.
Wow.
Killed, murdered, I should say even aborted, murdered 63 million babies.
Wow.
Now that's, most countries are smaller than that.
And there are abortions going on long before that.
Oh, absolutely.
Remember, we had Hill Country Patriots' very own Lorraine Lamont on our show talking about how when she learned when she was about 15 years old that her mother had an abortion, attempting
All right. Allison can't tell this story, so I will pick up on it. Her mother sat her down. She, Lorraine comes from a broken home, and she basically raised herself.
She grew up in inner city, Detroit.
In the inner city in Detroit.
Detroit.
A very difficult upbringing, obviously. And her mother showed up one day, and I think Lorraine said she was 15, and her mother immediately said, you know, you want a beer? And but she said, I got to tell you something. And she said, you were aborted. And Lorraine says, you know, thinks, all right, what drugs are you on?
Well, first of all, this is long, my point is, this is long before 1973.
That's true.
Long before 1973.
And Lorraine says that abortions were very common in the black community, which they were. She said, mm-hmm. You can get an abortion as easy as you can buy a gallon of milk. People say, well, why would that be? Because if you look into the history of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, who started it, she was a complete, total racist, and she believed that she thought abortion was best for the black community to eliminate black
yeah.
people.
She wanted to cleanse
the race. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so that's why it was such a big thing. And of course, Lorraine knows all about this. But anyway, her mother said, you were aborted. And she said, oh, okay, Mom. She went to the abortionist, her mother, and got an abortion. And she believed that she was still pregnant. And she went to told the abortion doctor. And he said, that's ridiculous. He was German. She said, he was very, very imperial, German imperialist. And he said, ridiculous. You were aborted. I took the fetus out, as he put it. And he says, come in and I'll find out what's wrong with you. So she came in and he was shocked. He pulled his chair away from her when he discovered that she was pregnant, that she had twins and he'd only found one.
Yeah, that was back before the days of all the imaging that they can do to see exactly what's in there.
They didn't have that. And he was stunned to find that she was pregnant and that baby was Lorraine. And Lorraine Lamont, our own Lorraine Lamont. And she says, you know, people say, why do you... I mean, Lorraine is a whirlwind. I mean, she has her own charity, heart to heart. She's a performer, blues and pop singer. She's got an event coming up, by the way, on October 20th at the Dietrich Center in Kerrville. She's up close and personal with Lorraine Lamont, Uncensored, and limited seating. You have to register, so you can visit lorrainelamont.net, and that's LORRAINE, like lemon, LEMON, .net, lorrainelamont.net. That'll be October 20th, something you ought to go to, and a chance to get to know Lorraine much better. She says, why do people, people's asked me, why do I do what I do? It's because I'm living for two, me and my sister.
Brother. She refers to him as brother.
Okay.
She probably doesn't know, but no, know. But she
well,
does
getting
say
back
brother.
To our, we kind of got off on a tangent of Lorraine. So we have abortion. The enemy has been trying to normalize murder through abortion, same as the homosexual agenda. You know, that's a hopeless, you know, they don't have babies. Satan's been working to minimize that as not being a big deal. He'll cloak murder under the guise of a woman's right to choose, or that an unborn baby isn't really alive, so abortion isn't really murder. The third tactic Satan's been using to attack our nation and our society, especially targeting the younger generation, is by causing confusion over your gender and sexual identity. They're very confused now about something as simple as your own gender. I read some so-called doctor saying that when a baby is born, we don't know what sex it is, what gender it is. I mean, really? You're a doctor?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I babysat when I was a teenager, and believe me, I could tell you if a baby was a boy or a girl.
Well, yeah, yeah. There's some interviews on college campuses.
The boys pee in your face.
okay, thank you for bringing that up. When students are asked how many genders there are, some responded with infinite And some of them just make up numbers because they have no idea. Job applications you've probably seen are online where they do a survey or something. Male, female, other. Gender is being removed from birth certificates. Passports will now have an X gender. So the enemy's doing a job on our youth, getting them confused. The Bible says there are only two genders. Genesis 1:27 says God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. It doesn't say male, female, fluid, trans, two genders. There's two genders. There's a lot of mental illnesses, though, but there are only two genders. Joe Rogan, on his podcast, had this to say about this whole subject, and he interviewed a man, which you'll hear about, as to what's going on in society.
This happens at the end of every civilization's reign. And I think this happened with the Greeks and it happened with the Romans. It's one of the things that Douglas Murray, when I had him on my podcast, was discussing. He said one of the things that happens at the end of civilizations is they become obsessed with gender. It's a thing that happens where men start becoming women, women start becoming men, and it becomes like a big focus, like cross-dressing and all this stuff becomes a big point of focus. And I was like, well, why is that? He goes, it seems to be that they're dissolving all boundaries and all norms and all societal structure. And that's a part of it. It's like gender roles.
I think it must be something to do with those boundaries and all other boundaries starting to erode. I mean, the nature of society is that we have certain fixed ideas that we agree on. I mean, trans is a brilliant one, but the whole non-binary thing is a brilliant one if you wanted to pull apart society, because, again, get people to pretend that men and women don't exist. Get people to pretend that the one of the things that we've all known from the beginning doesn't exist, and you can do all of the other stuff too. It's a brilliant one to demoralize people on. Say there's no difference between men and women. The penis is a social construct. A Labour MP said recently on television, she actually had the gall to say on television, she said children are born without sex. Like penises and vaginas are so 20th century. And, if you do that stuff, then of course people end up, they just doubt everything. And that's why these things worry some of us, because if everybody is persuaded to doubt what they see with their eyes, then they can be persuaded to fall for absolutely anything. Shouldn't make me
happy. Coming up after this quick break, we're going to have an interview with January Wiese, Executive Director of the Hill Country Wine Association.
Well, welcome back to the Bill and Allison Show on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station, of course. I think you've heard that before. Allison, we have so much to cover.
I know.
And so little time.
I know.
Oh, my. We did have recently the opportunity to, just this couple of days ago, to talk with January Wiese, who's Executive Director of Hill Country Wineries. And we talked to her about the wine industry in Texas. She is an expert in it, and it was a good interview. I thought I certainly learned a lot, and I think Allison did too. So here we go with highlights from our interview with January Wiese.
Our guest on the Bill and Allison Show is January Wiese. She's Executive Director of the Texas Hill Country Wineries. Welcome back to the show, January.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You are an expert in all things Texas wine, and so we wanted to ask you a little bit about, a lot of people are not aware of the Texas wine industry or realize the growth that it's had in recent years. Give us a little thumbnail of that, if you would.
It has grown tremendously over the past few years. when I started with Texas Hill Country Wineries, I was working for one of our member wineries, and we only had 24 members. And this is just our association. And we are at 64 now here in the Hill Country. Based on the estimate that we have, there are over 150 wineries alone in the Hill Country. And every time I drive out 290 from Austin or back, I literally have the Notes app on my phone open, talk texting to myself, oh, new winery named this, new winery named that. It is blowing up out here. Not just here in the Hill Country, I mean, it's across the state. You know, for a long time, the Hill Country seemed to be the region with the most wineries, but there are a lot more wineries popping up in North Texas and over by Houston, and so, and of course, up in the High Plains. And so the industry across the state is just booming. The competitions, the international competitions, Texas wines are up there, and they are winning just as many gold awards and awards overall as any other region in the U.S.
And, of course, with the growth of Texas, the Texas wine industry is certainly benefited by the education.
Yes, so we have Texas A&M and Texas Tech and now Shriner University, Grayson. They all have viticulture and enology programs, and those, they have the full degrees, and then like Texas Tech has the certificate programs, and so they're really growing with the industry, trying to make sure that they're offering industry members or incoming industry members as many opportunities as they can to educate themselves and get ready to join.
You mentioned Shriner in Kerrville is teaching it, and A&M in Fredericksburg teaching it as well?
So A&M has a research lab in Fredericksburg. Texas Tech does have some space at the Hill Country University Center right there on 290, and they teach, I believe, both their viticulture and enology certificates out of there.
Well, speaking of that, Texas Hill Country Wineries has a scholarship program for people interested in getting into the industry. Could you tell us a little about that?
We do, yes. So a couple of years ago, we realized that there was a need to really help support these kids who either started in Texas wine and were getting educated to come back to it, or, you know, students who had learned about the industry and really wanted to get involved, to help them financially. And so we created the Texas Hill Country Wine Industry Scholarship Fund and Program. And over the past few years, we have awarded about 40 kids, about $70,000 total in scholarships.
I know you have an event where people can take advantage of an opportunity to taste a lot of different wines at a lot of different wineries. Why don't you tell us about that?
We do. We are celebrating Texas Wine Month, as we have been for about 24 years here in the Hill Country, with our Texas Wine Month passport. You can either buy a couple's ticket or an individual ticket and celebrate the entire month, so October 1st through October 31st. And we actually have 50 participating wineries, and with your ticket, you can visit 4 wineries a day and get a complimentary tasting at each, and then you can also use that to get a 15% discount on 3 bottle purchases.
Well, that's a real bargain.
This is a huge value because you're paying for that ticket in your first, you know, 4 stops.
How do people get more information and get a passport ticket?
So you can visit our new website, TexasHillCountryWineries.org, and you'll visit the Texas Wine Month event in the drop-down menu. And you can read all about the event details, the participating wineries, and purchase your ticket there.
Jerry Ray Wiese, Executive Director of the Texas Hill Country Wineries. And we always learn something new when we talk to you about wines. And appreciate your knowledge and you're willing to share it with us.
Well, that's great. That it's always fun talking to January and learning about Texas wines.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We moved to Hill Country in 97, and it's just incredible the way the industry has grown since we moved here. And we moved from Virginia, which has a huge wine industry, which we saw grow.
We lived in Virginia because, number one, it's a beautiful state to live in, but we worked on Capitol Hill in Congress mm-hmm. for many years as mm-hmm. congressional staffers. That's where we met, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
She was working in a congressional office right down the hall from me.
That's right.
Yeah,
yeah, we're neighbors.
Neighbors. Hey, neighbors. I married the girl next door.
Yes, that's right.
So to speak. That's right. I've never thought of that.
That's right. Yeah, we used to run into each other down in the recording studio.
Mm-hmm.
Our bosses, or the congressmen, would record radio shows, and mm-hmm. so Bill and I would take our congressman down there, and
we were the interviewers for
we were both press secretaries,
and those radio interviews went out to entire congressional district, all the radio stations in district, and we did TV shows with them and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We were press secretaries, and that's one of the many things you do as a press secretary. You're always campaigning is what you're doing, trying to get your congressman or woman reelected.
Yeah, that's what congressmen pretty much spend all their time doing.
Yeah, trying to get reelected.
That's why they go home every weekend, back to the district.
It's a full-time job. It's a tough job, too. It really is. Well, when we come back, we're looking at a hard break for news mm-hmm. and news and weather. And
we're going to have some guests in the studio.
We have some guests in the studio that you'll want to hear. They're musicians, quite well known in this area. Mm-hmm. And
they're going to be singing a song for
us. Singing a song for us and talking to them. So that'll be right after the news with Bill and Allison on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
The first couple of Texas radio. Here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
We are Bill and Allison. I thought you were going to say something else.
Oh, I forgot.
You forgot to talk.
I'm busy being an engineer.
How many guys have a wife who forgets to talk? I tell you.
Because she's so busy doing her job. That's
well, there you go.
Because we are having an eclipse in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today.
Ooh, 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, the annular Ring of Fire eclipse.
Are we going to broadcast it right here on Hill Country Patriot? Look, it's dark.
No, but you know who is broadcasting it, and that is NASA is broadcasting it from Kerrville, Louise Hayes Park.
Are they doing it elsewhere?
Not in Hill Country, just in Kerrville. They're doing it in three cities around the country that are in the path of the eclipse.
Big cities, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to Kerrville, which ain't a big city.
Exactly.
Thank the Lord.
That's why we live here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, don't be looking at the sun.
Yeah, because this eclipse, the sun is not totally blocked out. I mean, it's ring of fire. Mm-hmm. So you cannot look at it unless you're wearing eclipse glasses. Mm-hmm. And just regular sunglasses won't do it.
I think I mentioned this before, but it's not the Talmud. I think it's the Mishnah, another Jewish book. A king asks a rabbi, well, you believe in this God of yours, show me your God and then I'll believe. And the rabbi said, all right, your highness, but first you must stare at the sun for 1 minute. And of course the king looks up at the sun and he immediately has to turn away. And the rabbi said, your highness, you asked me to, you want to see God, and yet you cannot even look at one of his relatively minor creations.
Okay, just this week, after 25 years of stuffing red envelopes, Netflix has shipped out its last DVD.
Really?
Yeah.
We used to get those red envelopes.
We certainly did.
Years ago.
Exactly. It's no longer the cash cow it once was, and Netflix wants to cut costs where it can, and yet Netflix wouldn't be what it is today without the help of DVDs.
Mm.
It's the company that now influences decisions at the highest levels of Hollywood was built atop those shiny silver discs. In the beginning, there was Beetlejuice. Now, this is ironic. Isn't that the movie that Lorena Bobert was thrown out of last week or the week before?
Lorena Bobert?
Bobert, the congresswoman from Denver.
Her name is not Lorena. Lorena Bobbitt, you're thinking of.
Oh, well, what's her name? It's not Lorena?
No.
Bobert.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Congresswoman Bobert.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
She was thrown out of... It's a play, I think.
A play. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. She was thrown out of the theater for acting inappropriately.
Slightly.
Well, anyway, that was Beetlejuice. The Tim Burton film was the very first Netflix DVD that Netflix sent out in 1998. When most Friday nights were spent going to Blockbuster. You remember that?
Blockbuster, another name that nobody remembers.
Yeah, exactly. Netflix rendered that blue and gold behemoth obsolete by making it so easy to rent a DVD online, get it the next day, and no late fees, and you could keep it as long as you wanted.
No, I don't think we got it the next day. We live in Kerrville.
Well, that's what the story said, that you'll get it the next day.
I remember that. Okay. You're right.
Anyway, at its height, Netflix was the U.S. Postal Service's fifth largest customer, processing 1.2 million DVDs weekly.
Wow.
It generated $2.6 billion in profit between 2012 and 2019.
No kidding.
Yeah. And okay, the end of the service was inevitable. There were still about 1 million paying customers. Hard to believe. Sad to see it go.
Yeah.
For those loyal renters, Netflix offered a parting gift. They can keep their final discs. Isn't that great?
Seriously?
Yeah, isn't that great?
Oh my gosh, that is funny. That is funny. Well, here's an interesting story. It's pretty much self-explanatory in the audio clip that Alice and I have.
The tables are turned. Instead of Bank of America foreclosing on a homeowner has deputies foreclose on the bank.
Bank of America filed foreclosure papers on a homeowner who didn't owe a dime. They paid for their house with cash.
This is about a family who fought back and won. Their foreclosure nightmare started when they bought a house in the Golden Gate Estates owned by Bank of America. Like you said, they paid cash, so they never had a mortgage. Well, Bank of America fouled it up somewhere along the lines and actually tried to foreclose on the family.
Movers, a truck, and an armed deputy, all while a nervous homeowner stands by and waits. This is normally what you'd see when a person's being foreclosed on and their property seized by a bank. But today, it's the other way around.
They've ignored our calls, ignored our letters. Legally, this is the next step to get my clients compensated.
A Collier County judge said Bank of America had to pay Maureen Nyerges and her husband's legal fees after the bank tried to foreclose on their Golden Gate Estates property, but they paid cash. The courts agreed they never had a mortgage to begin with. After more than 5 months, the bank still hadn't paid up. So the homeowner's attorney did just what the bank would do to get their money. Seize their assets.
I instructed the deputy to go in and take desks, computers, copiers, filing cabinets, including cash in the drawers.
Outside the bank, several deputies stood by with movers ready to start hauling out the bank's office supplies and furniture. The bank manager tried to figure out what to do.
He was visibly shaken. I having two sheriff's deputies sitting across your desk and a lawyer standing up behind them, demanding whatever assets are in the bank, it can be intimidating. But so is having your home foreclosed on when it wasn't right.
After about an hour, the bank finally cut a check.
As a foreclosure defense attorney, this is sweet justice because this is a symptom of a larger problem.
Now, the homeowner's attorney says that he sees mistakes all the time in foreclosure court where banks do not do their due diligence, and it winds up becoming a very lengthy process for the homeowner.
Coming up after the break, very short break, we're going to have a couple of musical guests in the studio, Michael Herrera and Rod McGee. As I said before the break, we have live in the studio two musicians, Michael Herrera and Rod McGee.
Hello there.
Well, welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Pretty well-known musicians around these parts.
Now, what's the name of your group?
Well, we're so well-known, the name of the band is The Unknowns.
That's great. Yeah. Now, we have a song of yours that we're going to play. Would you like to introduce it?
Well, the song is called Narrow Muddy River. It's about the Rio Grande, and the location is around Juarez. And it's about a couple that live in Mexico, and a romantic couple. And she ends up leaving Mexico, going to El Paso. She marries some American that's quite wealthy. She lives in this high-rise, and he sits there in Juarez at night looking at this beautiful lit-up city of El Paso, and her view is of the barrio. So it's a kind of a contrast between sides, and a lot of other things are involved. But yeah, Narrow Muddy River. Michael sings it wonderfully. We think it's a pretty good song.
Yes, the background singers, drummer, and bass player. The drummer is Carlos Escobedo, and bass player is Luis Real, and they are pretty famous around here too. So. Infamous, yeah.
We recorded it.
Do the stars shine as bright? Yeah, Mr. Rod does the lead guitar on it, and he's the actual writer of it.
Yes. We love doing original songs.
Where I used to hold you on the banks where we lay across that narrow muddy river, where it's a lifetime away. He gave you diamonds, I gave you dreams, but dreams they sparkle like your new wedding ring. I hope you'll drift back sometimes to this place, across that narrow muddy river, where it's a lifetime away. It's a fine line and bone, in his image we're made. We share the same sun, the moon, and the rain. But I sweat and I toil, not one vessel have I saved, and the land of his father is now your rightful claim. Across that narrow muddy river, where it's a lifetime away.
lifetime away.
Thank you very much. That was a beautiful song.
Well, thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, I understand that Rod not only sings and plays, but he's also an artist who has work on display at River's Edge Gallery.
That is correct. River's Edge Gallery in Kerrville, and also Art Incorporated in San Antonio.
What do you do?
I'm an oil painter. I paint bright, colorful landscapes, a little bit of everything. I do portrait. I do abstract. I've been doing it full-time for 30 years. So I have survived painting art.
Yeah, well, Rod's a little bit abstract.
I have a successful wife. So that helps. My wife, Lisa, and we have a 7-year-old boy named Liam. And he's an artist. He's actually featured on the cover of the Kerr County Current paper this week with his artwork.
Congratulations. Well, Michael, tell us a little bit about the history of the band, your background.
Well, it actually started with Rod telling me, hey, why don't you come over to my house and let's jam a little bit. I said, well, yeah, you know, I hadn't been doing music for a while. And so I finally gave in and started jamming. And then a couple of weeks later, hey, you know, we could play at this place over here if you want to try it. And so it started there. So we started playing gigs as a duo. And then all of a sudden it said, hey, there's these two guys that, you know, a bass player and a drummer. Maybe let's practice with them a couple of times. And so here we are, four people now.
And when was that? When did you get started?
We've only been together, what, a month and a half, 2 months maybe?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, I think it's been only, when did we start practicing with them?
About a year ago.
No, with the guys.
Oh, yeah. Full band's about a month.
Yeah. Yeah, me and Rod have been playing about a year and a half, I guess, something like that.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting the way we came up with the name The Unknowns. I had a friend, a musician, Paul Tennyson, who just passed away recently, a great guitar player. And I asked him a couple of years ago, I said, Paul, what's a good name for a band that just does original material? And he said, The Unheard Ofs. And he was right.
So you went with it.
Yeah. So we do interject some original songs. Maybe about 5 or 10% of our total show is original. So.
And where do you guys play?
Well, our next gig
any
is
place that'll pay you.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We're not in it for the money, but we're not.
Obviously.
We're not going to do it for free. Let's put it that way. Our next gig is going to be at the Arrowhead Creek Vineyard. From 2 to 5 Saturday, the 7th. That is in Stonewall.
Okay.
And that's this Saturday?
That's the 7th of October.
Oh, okay.
290, Highway 290.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to be at the Chalk Festival. The two of us are going to be at the Chalk Festival. We play from 12:30 to 1:30 on the
in Kerrville.
In Kerrville.
Mm-hmm.
That's the 14th. And then we're going to play at La Escondida 1962. On Saturday, October 28th.
Where is that?
That is on Jefferson Street, right next to Nobility.
In Kerrville.
In Kerrville, Texas. Place. Yes.
New
venue.
Yeah, they were there for a little bit, and then they closed to revamp everything, and now they have a full liquor license and coffee.
Really?
So they could get you
a tea place.
They could get you drunk. No, not Nobility. It's called La Escondida.
Oh, that's right.
It's right to the left.
I know where that place is. Yeah. So they're reopening.
So they reopened last week.
So you said it's a bar?
It's a bar and a coffee place, so they can get you drunk and get you sober at the same time.
Cool.
And then get your haircut.
That's right next door in their barbershop.
That's funny. We're talking to Michael Herrera and Rod McGee. And McGee.
Yeah, sounds like you're ticklish.
Like you're laughing. Okay. McGee.
Okay.
grow up with that name.
Yeah. And they are part of the Unheard Ofs.
The Unknowns.
The Unknowns. We don't know who they are, actually.
That's why.
Just two strangers in black t-shirts stumbled into the studio
claiming to be musicians, but I don't see any instruments, so
that's right.
Not sure exactly what's
we
going
play
on.
The radio.
Yeah. Michael, let's take a little detour here for a minute, if you don't mind my asking about your New Mexico roots and your family. You've got some interesting people in your background.
Well, yeah. I was born in Ruidoso, New Mexico, and there's a lot of history, like with Billy the Kid and all that back there. My great-great-grandfather was a probate judge in Lincoln, New Mexico during that time.
Mm. Lincoln County War.
Lincoln County War, yeah. So I had one side of the family that was arresting Billy the Kid, and the other side of the family was hiding him. So.
Well, actually, when Bill and I learned a lot about Billy the Kid being out in Lincoln County, mm-hmm. and he really wasn't the bad guy that most people think he was.
Well, it depends on the side you look at.
Okay. Yeah, I would think the family of who was the sheriff's deputy that he shot?
Brady. Yes.
And... well, he claims he wasn't there. He claims he did not participate in the Brady one, yeah. But he did definitely shoot Bob Olinger.
Oh, yeah.
So the family of Bob Olinger would disagree with you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, while we're talking about Billy the Kid, do you guys know Rod and Michael, that he just died in the, what was in the 50s?
49 or 51 or something.
In Texas.
That's what they say.
Brushy Bill Roberts.
Brushy Bill Roberts. If you're going up, what's the highway? It goes through
Hico. 16.
Yeah. Goes through Hico. Right on the highway, there's a grave. Billy the Kid. I believe it's in Hico, and he lived in the town right next door.
Hamilton.
He lived in Hamilton and was buried in Hico.
Wow. I was just there. I didn't know. I would have stopped.
Yeah, as you go north, it's on the right. The cemetery is on the right, and his grave is right there.
It's right on the road.
It's all decorated. People leave beer cans and all stuff. I don't know, but Michael knows all about Brushy Bill Roberts.
Well, there's the controversy. Some people say, yeah, it could be. It's possible it could be, but then there's the people that the relatives that say, no, that's not him. Hmm. So you know,
yeah,
one of those things.
Yeah,
since we weren't around to.
No,
to watch the whole thing happen.
I am kind of an advocate. I read a couple of books about mm-hmm. him, and that makes a lot of sense. I understand that this guy who they discovered him was an attorney with an insurance agency, and he took him to New Mexico to meet some of Billy's old friends, yep. and a lot of them said, yeah, that's Billy.
Yep.
So who knows?
Exactly.
Who knows? Interesting.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you got sidetracked.
We did. Well, I thought that, you know, Michael knows a lot about that. Rod, what's your background?
I was born in Iowa, and my father moved every year. I went to school in Northwest Missouri, got my degree in art, and my dad said I'll never make any money at that, and he was probably right at the time. So I went to work for a newspaper, and I worked for newspapers for 9 years. Then I worked in television. I was a promotion manager for Fox television stations for years out in Odessa, Rhode Island, and in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And then I moved back to Marble Falls, where my mom lived, and started painting again. And I've been painting full-time since, I guess, 1990. And it's a tough way to make a living, but it's all I really know how to do. And that's about it.
Well, I'm sure you haven't had an interesting life.
Yeah, it's been boring. I have to tell you the joke, the time I met Timothy Leary, but that's for another story.
Really?
Yeah, that was interesting.
And you remember it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He probably wouldn't.
But. Yeah, I can't use profanity on the air, but I'll tell you a story later.
Rod just won an award also.
Oh, yeah, my college. Thank you. My college back in Missouri gave me an award for outstanding arts achievement.
Oh.
It was a slow news day. They didn't have anybody else to give it to, so my wife and I went up there and had a great time.
Congratulations.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah, as I say, we're talking with Michael Herrera and Rod McGee.
Yeah.
Got it that time.
Right. I'd like to say something about the parallel between music and art. It's the same creative process. Writing a song or doing a painting, it's the same thing. I will say I made more money in one painting than I did in 10 years of music. But but we do it because we love it. Like Michael says, we're not doing it for the money. But we're, you know, you don't want to give it away
either. Exactly.
Yeah. We'll never make enough to pay all of our equipment off anyway.
So does that mean my doing here is kind of art?
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, it is. Exactly. It's sculpture.
See my latest do.
Yeah. That's a nice do.
Well, Allison used to have quite long hair, right. And she visited Michael. Michael is a professional hair sculptor.
Michelangelo.
Going to new phrase, hair sculptor.
And I said, do your magic, Michael.
So he cut a lot of it off, and so I started growing mine out, I think, as a trade-off.
Yeah, we were at a party the other day, and our hostess said, there were some people that we had not met before, and our hostess said, Allison, you have really long hair, and now Bill's the one with really long hair.
Yeah. What can I say?
That happens.
Yeah. So anyway. Well, good. Well, again, tell us where people can go to hear your band.
Arrowhead Creek Vineyard on the 7th from 2 to 5. Let me look at the schedule again. Since I'm old, you know, I can't remember anything. Kerrville Chalk Festival, Saturday, October 14th from 12:30 to 1:30. La Escondida 1962 here in Kerrville on Jefferson Street, Saturday, October the 28th at 2 to 6. Be there or be square.
All right.
And we are the Unknowns. Nobody knows us.
The Unknowns. The Unknowns.
Have you heard of us?
Have I heard of the Unknowns? Now I have. Rod McGehee, Michael Herrera, the Unknowns. So be sure to go catch them. You know, catch one of their gigs or all of them coming up.
One more song. Thank you for having us.
Oh, thanks. We're very happy that you could take the time to join us this morning on the Bill and Allison Show on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. And when we come back, I'm going to give you some reasons why you should vote Democrat. We'll be back after a quick break.
Of a lifetime. One more song for you.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison.
Yes, we are.
Hill Country Patriot. And you can listen to us anytime. FirstCoupleOfTexasRadio.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a fun interview. We enjoyed Michael Herrera and Rod McGehee, the Unknowns, and their gigs coming up. We've got to catch them. Mm-hmm. Well, you know that the Western world came within a knife's edge of being completely subjugated and placed under perpetual medical tyranny by a coalition of government officials, globalist corporate partners. But the greater agenda has been revealed, you know. Today, these people who deny that there's a conspiracy, most of them ain't denying it now, are they, Allison?
That's true.
You know, when it comes to the bottom line, basically, is you either believe in the conspiracy theory of history or the coincidence theory of history. And there is a cabal of power elites. They're highly organized around a globalist ideology. They want total centralized control of society. I mean, there's endless proof of that. Debate is over on that. The COVID response actually ended it. And, you know, the list of crimes against civil liberties is very long. Business, church shutdowns. I mean, nothing spoke better about their agenda was when they told churches that they could not meet and actually had police preventing people from going to church. There's all sorts of videos. You can look that up. Police preventing people from going to church, and yet they left abortion mills and marijuana dispensaries open because they were essential.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And mom and pop stores had to be closed, but Walmart was open.
Exactly. Put the mom and pop. They want to put small business out of business. Mm-hmm. Small businesses out of business. So nothing could speak louder than those actions right there. And the forced vaccinations in many countries, and here too. You want to be in the military, you have to be vaccinated. You want to come to the United States, you have to be vaccinated. You want this job, you have to be vaccinated. using, you know, people say that the vaccine wasn't experiment, the cold so-called vaccine. It's not a vaccine, really. It's an mRNA changing device. They say it wasn't tested. Yeah, it was tested on millions of people, unfortunately. FEMA camps, all this kind of stuff. A large percentage of Democrats in polls supported even more extreme policies. 55% of Democrats wanted fines for unvaxxed Americans. 59% of Democrats, this is the average of polls, wanted the unvaccinated forcefully confined to their homes. 48% of Democrats wanted prison time for anyone that questioned the COVID shot. 47% of Democrats were in favor of government tracking of the unvaccinated. And 29% of Democrats were in favor of taking children away from the unvaccinated. Can you believe that?
Mm-mm.
Can you believe that? So the goal was to make life so miserable for the unvaccinated, they would eventually comply in order to survive. That way the left could claim, well, people volunteered for the vaccines and the jab. Nobody was forced. What they meant was nobody was forced at gunpoint, but we knew that threat was going to come next. You know, it's all rationalized and saving lives. Oh, saving lives. When the fact is, no lives were saved by the mandates. The official CBD median COVID fatality rate is 0.23%. In all other words, all of these constitutional violations were attempted over a virus that 99.8% of people would inevitably catch and easily survive. The reason you don't hear about today much about it today is people have natural immunity to it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll save that for next time. I don't think we have time for it. But
you're stupid.
Is this about me?
No, it's about what you were just reading.
Stupid.
Yeah.
You're stupid.
But what happened is globalists have underestimated the resistance to their agenda. People were ready to go to war over it. A lot of conservatives, independents, dozens of red states made their stand. And suddenly, like magic, the COVID hysteria vanished. I always say the left goes too far. The left always goes too far, and but the problem is, we start over again, and the center has moved to the left. But the globalists this time were not ready to risk a fight against a massive insurgency. Now they say the COVID agenda is going to make a comeback with a new hyped up strain of the virus. I think that's going to hit a wall. With more Americans aware of the pointlessness of the mandates and masks. I mean, masks are, you wear a mask in public, you know, wear a diaper on your face, you just look like you're willfully ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I don't think it's going to get much traction. Of course, as long as the people behind these schemes remain unpunished, they're going to try again and again until something sticks. Government agencies, officials like Dr. Fauci, remain unpunished for their numerous lies for all the people who died because of their recommendations. And for the whole generation of children who have no social skills, who have to be taught how to smile. Seriously. And Joe Biden remains unpunished for his attempts to supplant the Bill of Rights. Mainstream media, big tech, they're unpunished for their collusion, propaganda, and censorship. But I think they can't get away with it again. I really do. I think that what has happened is... people have wised up now, and they're not going to go along with it. We will never. Alice and I have agreed. If mask mandates come back, we're not wearing them.
Mm-hmm.
Can't put us all in jail.
Exactly.
Put us all in jail.
And I don't think we'll be alone. I've heard a whole lot of people say we will not comply.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people.
No, just not going to do it. But I've decided to vote Democrat anyway, Allison.
Okay, tell me why.
Oh, I've got a lot of reasons. I'm going to vote Democrat because I think oil companies' profits of 4% on a gallon of gas are obscene, but the government taxing the same gallon at 15% isn't obscene. I'm going to vote Democrat because I believe the government is going to do a better job of spending my money than I would. I'm going to vote Democrat because no constitutional right is absolute. For example, the Second Amendment, we've been told, is by Joe Biden and by the governor of New Mexico, Michelle Lujan Grisham. Gresham. So the Second Amendment is not absolute, or the First Amendment. The First Amendment's okay as long as nobody's offended. Now, she said, and Joe Biden both said, no constitutional amendment is absolute. I still haven't reconciled with that, the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery, or the 19th Amendment giving women the right to vote. I'm going to ask the New Mexico governor about that one to explain that to me. I'm going to vote Democrat because I know that my local police are all I need to protect me from murderers and thieves. I'm thankful we have 9/11 service. It gets police to your home in order to identify your body after a home invasion. I vote Democrat because I'm not concerned about millions of babies being murdered by abortion as long as we keep all death row inmates alive and comfy, give them priority for such things as heart transplants. But the number one reason I'm going to vote Democrat, because then I can decide to be a woman today, get naked, hang out in their bathrooms and gym showers. That's my reasoning. Yeah. Well, normally I'd say, Allison, what you got? But you got our website?
Got to run.
You got our website?
Our website is firstcoupleoftexasradio.com.
And time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana. Chew on that one for a while. We are Bill and Allison. We're here every Saturday.
From 8 to 10.
8 to 10, right here in the Hill Country Patriot, your information station for the entire Hill Country. And we appreciate you being with us. We've got so much stuff we didn't cover. We'll get to it next week, and new stuff as well. In the meantime, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths.